Today, my guest on Piano Jazz is pianist-composer Billy Childs, a marvelous musician whose compositions range from jazz to chamber ensembles and everything in between. It's sheer musicality at every level. Billy, how are you?
It's great to see you. I'm great.
You certainly look great.
And likewise.
And you've been doing so much.
It's been quite a couple of years. It's been really busy and really it's been productive and really exciting. And I'm glad to be doing what I'm doing.
Well, you got your new record is so interesting with the ensembles. That is really fascinating.
Thank you. It was kind of a labor of love. It was. I call it a jazz chamber ensemble, and it was something that's been in the making for like 5 years or so before we recorded.
You really wanted to do that type of a thing?
Yeah, I did. You know, I really did. And I guess the nucleus of the group was like piano, guitar, acoustic guitar, and harp. And I wanted to get these three stringed instruments together and see what it sounded like. I loved the sonic possibilities of that combination. So we went through a lot of different metamorphoses and finally, you know, ended up where we are now.
Well, it's beautiful music, and I congratulate you on that and your Grammys and your being nominated for Grammys. My goodness.
What made it really rewarding to do the CD was that I paid for it myself, and then it got nominated in three different categories and actually ended up winning in one of the categories, Best Instrumental Composition.
Oh, that's one of the things on your record.
Yeah.
Into the Light, is it called?
Yeah, Into the Light. Yeah.
You probably couldn't even play a little bit of that, could you?
Yeah, I could. It's basically the tune is written for this large chamber ensemble, like a string quartet and my jazz chamber. So the piano part is kind of just a piano part, but I'll see if I can kind of consolidate the melody in there somehow a little bit so you get an idea of what
just
it is.
Just a little touch to hear. Yeah. What
well, it starts out with this ostinato. Into a holy string quartet type of writing that I did where the string quartet is featured and then into like a kind of very heavily contrapuntal section.
Yeah, it's wonderful listening to that thing. It's a very exciting piece. No wonder you got a Grammy for that. So now I would just love to hear you play a tune.
Okay. What I was singing and playing was something off of the CD lyric. It's a tune called Hope in the Face of Despair. And basically, it was inspired by this graphic novel by Art Spiegelman called Mouse. And it tells the story of his father, who is a survivor of Auschwitz, you know, and his resiliency and resourcefulness. And so I found the story really inspiring, so I wrote this piece called Hope in the Face of Despair.
I'm dying to hear it.
Okay.
I'm thinking back to when you were a kid. What got you started playing the piano, like at 6 or 5 or around 6?
Well, you know, my parents were both school teachers, and they had a piano around the house. And my oldest sister, Joy, and my next-door neighbor, who's also a pianist, a guy named Leon Biscara, is a really good pianist. They were both highly influential on me in terms of, like, introducing me to jazz, you know. Joy brought around jazz records to the house, and I would listen to them. But then I would hang out with Leon next door, and he had various groups, and he introduced me to Herbie Hancock, you know.
Oh, my goodness. That was a good thing to do.
That was all she wrote. He in fact, he taught me Cantaloupe Island on the piano.
Oh, I love that piece. Yeah, right. I love that. So you had a piano in your house.
Yeah, definitely. And so then I started playing. I was, you know, I just mess around with it. I took piano lessons, but it kind of went in one ear and out the other, you know, when I was about 6. And then again when I was about 11. In fact, I had a teacher named Mrs. Severe. That was her name.
Oh, what a name.
And she was severe. She lived up to her name. But then my parents sent me to a boarding school for boys. It's called Midland because kind of the public school system in L.A. was going south at the time, you know, so they wanted me to go to, like, these really academically overachieving schools. So I went to Midland, and there was nothing. I was, you know, it was cultural shock, and there was nothing to do but play piano, you know. So I actually, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer was kind of the catalyst that got me into playing piano again, seriously.
They had a good group.
They were incredible, man.
They were.
It was – and really influential on me as a composer and as a conceptualist, you know.
Yeah, because you kind of got into being more of a composer than the pianist, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much, and that's – yeah, that's kind of the way it – my career has – I've always wanted to keep my piano, you know, at kind of the same level compositionally, but then, you know, it's hard to do both, you know, and I kind of gravitated more towards a compositional thing. And
when you had a composition teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert Lynn, is that his name?
Robert Lynn, yeah. He was actually another, I consider myself to have had two great teachers in my life. He was one of them, and then Freddie Hubbard was the other one.
Freddie Hubbard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You worked with Freddie Hubbard and
yeah.
Joe Henderson, was it?
Yeah, I've worked with Freddie Hubbard, Joe Henderson, Bobby Hutcherson, a lot of different people, you know. But Freddie, J.J. Johnson also, Freddie was the one that actually put up with my mistakes more than anybody and showed me the way to really just refine myself as a pianist.
What do you mean, your mistakes? You were comping for him, weren't you?
Comping?
Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes the comping became over-comping, you know, like, let me help you in your solo.
Oh.
Let me push you in this direction. And he'd just turn around and say, lay out, you know, you know, which was probably the best advice. You know, I'd listened to some of those tapes, and I thought there was no way I had business on stage with him. You know, he was – but then he – I think he was following the tradition of Art Blakey of, like, of taking in young players who are maybe unrefined and forming a concept with them. And it was just immeasurable, the influence – and the value that I got, what it has done for my musicianship and my life, is I'll never be able to repay him.
Boy, Freddie, are you listening? Well, I can't wait to hear you play Scarborough Fair. That's
yeah.
Got to be something. Why did you choose that one particularly?
Well, that piece, I don't know. The modality of it, the fact that it to me sounds like open stringed instruments, guitars, and just the way the melody is like know, it just has that open sound to it, and that was attractive to me.
It's sort of melancholy in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, I can't wait to hear it.
Okay.
Billy joined me for the first time in 1993, and he talked about putting his own stamp on standard tunes.
I'm wondering, how do you learn, like, a standard tune? Do you just hear it and...
Yeah, pretty much. I hear it and either transcribe it off the record, or I'll go to a fake book or something and learn it out of there. I usually just learn someone's version of it, you know, and then kind of say, oh, that chord might be nice there or something.
Yeah, I was wondering how you did that, because you have some really nice changes of your own. I guess that's what
Thank
happens, you.
You
know. You copy somebody else's way of doing it or the fake book, and then you just start putting your own stuff in.
Yeah, it's especially really nice. With, like, dominant chords. When I'm dealing with dominant chords, I mean, there's so many variations of a dominant chord, you know, that a different kind of dominant chord could change the whole sound of the whole song.
Well, show me one. Do something. Show me what you mean. Cause
well, like it, on Never Let Me Go, I'll just do that like that. If I'm soloing on this, a lot of people may go. You know, play the D7 sharp 11 or something, but I like D7 sharp 9, you know, which changes the whole thing. Kind of opens it up for me, you know.
Yeah, I think I should play it now. I've heard you play it.
Oh, well.
But it's interesting how just changing like one note in the chord or just the voicing
mm-hmm.
makes it your own thing.
Yeah, definitely. It's like where you put that dominant chord or that diminished chord or whatever, you know, that makes it you.
Well, let's see now. What are we going to do here? You picked one that... by one of my idols, Bud Powell, I think. This one's what? Hallucinations?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great one.
Yeah.
Go ahead
like
and play
too.
It. I'm dying to hear that.
Hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast. Tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Parks Service, Department of the Interior, the Baldwin Piano Company, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.